fellas over there and shake hands, smile, hug their neck.
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we got to do.
We got to stop that buddy ball. Smash everybody in the mouth.
Hey, baby, we're going to be here all day, baby. I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
You're in the Doghouse with Rick Watson and Big Dog Sports Talk on 105.3 The Bear.
Remember, with great power comes great responsibility.
You know what that means? Do you? We're the underdog. We're mutts.
My number one play is the power sweep.
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
Welcome in to Hour 3, the Power Hour, on Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson. Join the conversation now on the Baker Team Hotline, 540-731-1053, or text Rick and the show at 744-2990. And now your host, the Big Dog, Rick Watson.
Three underway on a Monday. It's going to be a nice day in the hood. Humidity level way down today as opposed to the weekend. Call us up on the Baker Team Hotline, 731-1053. Text line 744-2990. Lots of texts flying in this morning about various topics that we have discussed. From the long history of coaches who proclaim they're never leaving to leaving either the next day or shortly thereafter. To all the Virginia Tech football recruiting news over the weekend, however you accept that is up to you. I'm glad for Brent Pry that they're getting players they're focused on. That shows you the momentum's continuing. Now, of course, what kind of production do you get? Maybe more scrutiny about high school players than ever before. And something else that Al brought up earlier is he called us up on his birthday. Is the development piece has to come back into play at some point, because if it doesn't, what do you do going forward? I think that's a great point. Like, kids that are jumping from school to school, upperclassmen's one thing, but younger players might be looked at a little differently. How much money can they expect to get if they haven't developed? Getting back to our basketball discussion, the reason I feel like, I don't want to use the term, the word easier, simpler, but I do believe it's more concrete. And I can only speak from it talking to our coaches, because not only is it you're getting a mid-major perspective, but you're getting basically what's happening on the national perspective as well. There are certain power fours that are going to expect to have their roster change because of, well, first of all, NBA entries, kids who are going to leave early to go to the league. And then you're going to have to deal with portal in and out. Virginia Tech had to deal with losing all five of their starters from last year. Right? Mike Young wasn't surprised. I mean, he was down at Edmonds shortly after all that was going on, and he wasn't fazed. I mean, I'm sure he'd much rather have had some of those kids back, but he knew. I mean, it wasn't like he was blindsided by the whole thing. So he went out and pieced together his new team. That's what you have to do. That's what Radford's coaches have been doing for months now. Really, since the end of March. And I haven't gotten to know the new team yet. We'll get to know them a lot better this week. But those guys are on campus, and they're wearing their Radford gear, and they're out there working hard. And you just have to sit there. From my perspective, I'll be entering my 25th year calling games for Radford University as the voice of the Highlanders. And this is the first time, recent years, last couple of years, I guess, but first time you're going in and you know really nothing at all about many of the players other than where they're coming from. Now, that'll come, obviously, as you watch them practice and as you get ready for game one up in Pittsburgh against those Panthers and how the development comes and who ends up starting and how that chemistry is developing. And I think more than anything else, I mean, for instance, Mike Young's going to bring in players that are going to contribute. He's already shown he can do that, right? I mean, who's his best players been at Virginia Tech? Well, a couple of them have been mid-majors, Wofford players. So those guys can come in and be successful in the ACC if they learn the system and buy into what's being asked for. So I'm not really concerned overall about the talent level at either place. I know Radford's really excited about the talent level of player they've brought in. Same thing with Mike Young. But how do those guys come in? How do they mesh with one another? How do they adjust with being a, yes, it's still a term, student athlete at a brand new school on a brand new campus? In a new environment. Because you're making these moves. And I had a coach from a power school talk about this. These guys are making these moves, and the only thing on their mind about it is basketball. Like, the reason they're doing this is how to maximize, at least at his level, he said at our level, which means the Power Four level, trying to maximize their monetary value through basketball. And what we're seeing, our kids are woefully unprepared once they start getting paid to want to fall back into the classroom. It makes sense, doesn't it? Hey, I'm coming there. I'm going to get, I don't know, let's just make up a deal. Let's say I'm leaving one school, power school, to come to your school, and I'm going to make upwards of $300,000 to $500,000 in the span of my year or so at your school. And that's for playing basketball. That's not for going to class. You're already going to be making more money than you would likely make from getting that degree. Where's the motivation to get degrees? Where does that land in all this? I mean, I don't have the answer, but I think it's a good question to ask. What kind of rules are there going to be that are out there? For the academic piece, the APR, I mean, why would a kid who signs a deal for $500,000 or $1 million, the higher up echelon NIL earners, why would they be that concerned with getting up and trying to do well? I mean, what kind of personal motivation can you muster up to say, well, I'm making this kind of money, why do I have to continue to go to my 8 o'clock class? Right? Now, places like Radford, it's a lot, I think, more simplified for them to come do that because the NIL is not going to be that kind of astronomical numbers. And you have to have the academic rules in place everywhere to still qualify, right? I would guess. I don't know how that's going to change. And that's a question I've been asking. You know, schools say you have to maintain a certain GPA to participate. Well, now that all the gloves are off and this is nothing but professional sports, if you're committed, I brought this up before, and I don't have an answer from anybody. But if a kid is underperforming in the classroom, But yet you're paying them high six or seven figures to be in NIL, to be at your school. It's pay for play. Then, unless you work that into his NIL deal or her NIL deal, what do you do if you're the school? See, I don't know the answer. There's got to be something I'm missing here. This is why the whole employment in the future contract has now been kind of frowned upon by the actual athletes themselves. Because I would think that the power of the athletic departments would be, all right, here we go, but not only do you have to maintain a certain style of play and certain success we have to have on the floor, here's what we need you to do in the classroom, because schools are going to get punished if their athletes who are making a lot of NIL aren't contributing in the classroom and maintaining their grades. I don't know where all that lies, and that's why all this is such a mess. These are questions that I don't know if they've even had time to think about, because we're all still waiting for the ruling, for one, about the revenue sharing. But for me, I wonder about that. What would your motivation be? And this isn't judgment on any of these students, these athletes. This isn't judgment, because if I were a 19, 20-year-old and somebody was throwing $500,000 at me, I wouldn't give a damn about going to class unless it was, thrust upon me that I had to just to earn that money. Then maybe, right? Then maybe you would have to just kind of go back into that mindset. I mean, would you? If you were making what seven figures like Kyron Drones is making this year, how hard is it to, unless you're just thinking about your future and you're well thought out, I don't want to sell kids short. They might say their education is still important to them. And kudos to them. I love that. I hope that's the case. I wish it were the case everywhere for every kid that's going to transfer and go to the NIL and make money. I hope that's the case, but we can't be naive and think it's going to be the case for most. There's no way. There's just no way. So those are the kind of things that I think about. But from a basketball perspective, it's pretty cut and dried. I mean, heck, the week after Radford's season ended, I just remember Darius saying, man, it's going to be a totally new team every year. Every year we're going to have to just take a deep breath, and here we go. So this staff has done a good job putting together a new team, and Mike Young's staff did a good job of putting together a new team. Coaches across the country are going to have to do that. So simplified's not the right word, but it's more cut and dried, I think, from a basketball perspective. I'll disagree with Tim on that. Football, you're still trying to figure out an 85-man roster. Basketball, these coaches, there's enough communication there. I mean, you have basically anywhere from, 10 to 12 scholarship players every year. Just like 12 scholarship players. You're fully funded. And you have walk-ons and things like that. That's pretty much right there in your backyard. Coaches can keep their arms around that. It's a little harder for an 85-man roster. Wayne asking, how in the world do you enforce the academic part if you've invested $500,000? Exactly. Well, colleges get out of paying underperform paid players, just flunk them and say that they're not playing or not paying. Yeah, I mean, see, these are the things that I'm not even sure. I have no confidence anyway that any of these things have been thought about, because we still don't have the ruling yet. Are schools taking the initiative on all this? I mean, are we just going to keep playing pretend that it's the same ballgame in the era of the NIL for these young people as it was beforehand, where you had to have the academics line up so you could go out and even practice? Has any of this been thought about by schools? Because I think it's going to be very difficult to keep anybody motivated. I don't know the answer. Text message, here's the answer. Those making $500,000 will net about $325 after tax. then most likely won't have guidance, so they'll spend their money in cars. Might spend most of what's left over after 2 years. Then they're 21 and broke. Then their career's in. They don't have an education to fall back on. Maybe that's the mindset that the ones that will continue to strive for a degree will think about. Maybe so. I hope you're right. I hope that's the way they look at it. I hope people aren't being that careless with their money that they're making. But come on, if you're 20 years old and you're making that kind of money, what are you going to do? Are you thinking about going out and investing it? Nah, you're thinking about spending it on that car that the texter just mentioned, or whatever it might be. Keep your discussion text coming, 744-2990. More coming up.
It's the Big Dog on the Bear.
Socially distorted right now here on BDST here on the Bear. 744-2990. Rodney writing in, schools are really going to regret if they do decide to stop developing players like they used to, and that's what we hear a lot of. I know you try to develop it anyway for the season. I think the hardest thing is, you know, when you were able in the past to know that, okay, I'm going to have this kid for a certain amount of time. He's got to get acclimated to my system. How quickly does that happen? We see it all the time in professional free agency, right? Especially a quarterback who's coming into a new system. How quickly do they get acclimated and pick it up? Usually it's a while for rookies coming in and just, you know, being brought in. A lot of these rookie quarterbacks that are going to be so hyped. They come into a program, an offense they haven't necessarily run before. How long does it take them to get used to the terminology, to the personnel, and to the whole speed of the game, right? Well, the bigger challenge for these coaches now, or one of the bigger challenges, is now you have to recruit. You have to keep in mind, okay, this is how we play. This is the system in which he's coming from. He's in the portal. I'm going to have to talk to other coaches. And in basketball circles, I know there's the fraternity of basketball coaches is amazing to me, how most of the time, they'll talk to each other and be able to be pretty open about it. If a guy knows he's going to lose a kid, for instance, when Kenyon Giles left, I know our coaches were very forthright and honest and open when, you know, Mike Jones was recruiting him to come down there and play for UNCG. There wasn't any kind of animosity. I mean, he was just talking about the attributes the kid had. So they can talk to these guys, but then you have to get them here. And this is what I'm seeing now. You have to get them here. They have to get acclimated to their new community. Where are they going to live? Wow, I was at a school in Texas last year. Now I'm here in Southwest Virginia. Here's my class load. Oh, here's my new teammates that are from all over either the country and or the world. How quickly does that come together? And I think the successful teams are going to be the ones that obviously feel that chemistry part of it. Develop, because these guys really have nobody but themselves and their coaches to turn to. They don't know anybody from the student body. They don't know anybody really from administration. Like I say, I'm going to be getting to know some of these kids this week. I haven't talked to any of them. So all they have is one another, so they're going to have even more reliance on each other because they're all just coming in here in the same boat, regardless of what kind of NIL situation they're looking at. And Mike Young has a very complex system. Darius Nichols has a very complex system. It's not the easiest thing in the world just to come in and immediately, you know, hey, I'm going to dribble the basketball and shoot around and I'm going to fall right in. No, you have to have complete buy-in and guys have to kind of retrain themselves. I was going to play for this coach for 2 or 3 years. I knew exactly the kind of thing he was recruiting me for. We talked about the offense and what they expected on the other end of the floor. Well, now I'm leaving maybe my second system. You may be coming from your second or third school to another school. Heck, some of these guys have jumped around each year their college experience. How do they get used to playing the way that the new coaching staff wants and needs them to play? It's an answer to the question I don't have. But I do know it's a constant challenge for all these coaches. And I feel like it's a little easier, to be honest, from a football perspective in terms of adapting a new system. Football is football. You might do some things different offensively. Not for quarterbacks. Not for quarterbacks, it's the same. But, you know, receivers, linemen, running backs, things like that, defensively. But in basketball systems, there's a lot of specific things that are different than the one you're coming from in many cases. We're back. Final segment for another day after this.
Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson.
Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream.
This is Larry Coker, head football coach at the University of Miami. It's great to be on Big Dog Sports Talk with Rick Watson.
Now, how many Miami fans wish Larry Coker were still the head coach, huh? Come on. He only won about 80% of his games. That wasn't good enough. 731-1053 is the Baker team hotline. Text line 744-2990. But, hey, we're supposed to believe Miami's going to win at least 10 games this year. That's right. It's time for the U to come back. Right. Sam Howell's now the Mike Vick of the ACC. Mark writes in, easy to see why coaches, especially those that have been around a while, are saying, I've got enough money, I'm out. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. I think you're going to see more at some point, realize. It's hard, though. Like, for instance, Kirby Smart's never going to walk away from the football side of it. He's making $13.5 million a year to be head coach of Georgia. So you're not going to see him all of a sudden shrug and just say, hey, enough's enough. I can't do this anymore. Right? I can't do this anymore, so I'm leaving. No. But, yeah, certain guys, I get it. You understand why a guy like Roy Williams says, yeah, that's it. Absolutely. I understand it. But those challenges, I think, you're going to be earning a lot of that money now going forward with the way things are. Anybody excited about the Olympics? People getting excited about the Olympics? I find myself, and I don't know about you, I used to love the Olympics. Then you had all the boycotting going on from certain countries, and then we boycotted because of all the Cold Wars. Nothing envelops politics more than the Olympics from a sports perspective. I mean, it's directly head-to-head against politics from around the world. How much do the athletes care now that they're basically professionals there? I mean, it all comes down to it. And then again, something I talked about in the Open, we're the only country that actually has to sit there and worry whether or not our athletes are going to do something to disgrace the flag and the country they're representing with some kind of protest after they win a medal. Right? Don't see it anywhere else. It's embarrassing. It's just a shame. It's disgusting. But hopefully once we get into the games, I do enjoy the Summer Olympics. I enjoy the basketball. I enjoy the track events a lot. I'm not a swimmer. I'm not that strong a swimmer. But I like the swimming. Michael Phelps, before him, Mark Spitz back in the day. Those races are fun to watch. I get into that. Not so much. I'm not really a big gymnastics guy. I respect what they do, but, But I do enjoy the track events. And we usually do pretty well in the Summer Olympics overall. Not as dominant as we used to be, but I don't know how excited people are getting. I get torn when once we get started. I'm like, again, so I'm not watching any of these Olympic trials that are going forward. Because in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, we're going to be embarrassed on a worldwide stage with some of these athletes. They were making really good money. They were sitting there and they're on display, full throttle, and they're still going to do something to protest the very thing they're there for, to represent the country. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, 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 look who is changing her tune a little bit. Diana Taurasi. Oh, my goodness. Caitlin Clark yesterday. And her team that was so bad last year that they drafted her number one because they had the number one pick. They went to Phoenix in front of a sellout crowd to see Caitlin Clark. Those games usually don't sell out because Diana Taurasi is there. She's been there a long time, 20 years in the league. Taurasi's been one of the biggest critics of Clark for no reason. Caitlin Clark yesterday brought her team back, and they won at Phoenix. Rallied to win, and she was terrific as always. 15 points, 12 assists, 9 rebounds. She almost had a triple-double. And what did Clark say? Boy, now I understand why everybody is dissing her so badly in the WNBA. Here's what she said. I'm just happy we won the game. You know what? It was really cool to play against Taurasi, and obviously it was a really great game. This crowd was incredible. This is what it's all about. Woo! Boy, there's somebody you don't want to pull for. Didn't mention, never has mentioned any of the things that have been going on. Taurasi's now 42, all-time leading scorer in that league. When Taurasi, of course, said about Clark, hey, reality is coming. In terms of her transitioning from college to the WNBA. So yesterday after the game, when she watched Clark lead her team back and beat her team on its home floor, Taurasi has changed her tune a little bit. Interesting how that works. It's amazing what Caitlin's been able to do in her short career so far, Taurasi said. The one thing I love about her, really, is that she loves the game. You can really tell she's put the work in. It's been a lot of pressure. A lot of things been thrown at her, but she keeps showing up, getting better every game. Her future is super bright. Okay, that's not what you were saying when you were sitting there bitter that she just announced she's signing a $10 million deal with Nike, and you never did. You just said, hey, reality's coming. Then did you see this the other day at the presser? One of her teammates, one of Caitlin Clark's teammates, I think Aaliyah Boston, is that her name? Was not getting at, she had a bigger game than Clark. From a statistical standpoint, she had a better game. So they were asking Clark all these questions. And Clark interrupted at the end and she goes, tell you what, why don't you ask Aaliyah questions because she's the one who got us the win here tonight. She's the one you should be talking to. She even deflected the attention to one of her teammates who haven't been supportive of her in any way, shape, or form. Tell me again why people don't like her. She's exemplified nothing but she's got the maturity of somebody who's been playing professionally for 10 years. Casually goes out, one rebound away from a triple-double. She's having the best rookie season of any player in the history by far. Yeah, I heard people saying that she may not win the rookie of the year. that would be apropos for this league if they don't let her be rookie of the year for whatever reason. And they give it to Angel Reese or somebody like that. Can you imagine? The league that continues to squander away any of its credibility with these constant attacks on its most exciting player in a number of years. Again, The highest rated games in the history of the league have happened in the last 10 broadcasts here in 2024, and every game has involved Caitlin Clark. Not Angel Reese, not Dana Taurasi, not any of the veterans, nobody but one player. They sold out the game yesterday at Phoenix. You know why? Because Caitlin Clark was coming. She's selling out road games. The last basketball player that I knew could do that was Michael Jordan on the men's side in the NBA. To where you were going to go watch Jordan play, it didn't matter at all. Well, you know what? These fans want to go watch her play no matter at all. And I think in a lot of ways, the way she handles everything, telling reporters, you need to talk to my teammate, who wasn't there for me when I got the hell beat out of me, but that's okay. I'm going to rise above it. To saying how much fun it was to play in that environment yesterday. Didn't talk about her own numbers. Never has talked about her own numbers. Somebody brought up the other day that somebody put together this montage of a lot of these wonderful passes, these Magic Johnson type of passes that she's throwing that her teammates either can't catch or are not ready for because somehow she gets them the ball. And she gets credit for the turnovers, right? And they're, none of them are her fault, or very few of them are on her. But the way the rules stayed, whoever had the control the ball last, if the pass doesn't connect, it usually goes to the passer. They were asked about her turnover numbers being so high and inflated, when in reality, it's just that her teammates aren't used to having somebody being able to pass the ball like that. Her response was, I guess I just have to be a little better at making sure that I give them a better target, or they have to make sure I give them something better to get prepared for, give them better pre-notice, or make them more aware. She didn't say, yeah, they need to start catching the ball more. It's hurting me. Like I say, she's never said one thing that would not make you want to pull for her more. And no matter what she's making in this league, and no matter what she makes in this league, she's already got her money because of the Nike deal and other endorsement deals. She's going to continue to get more and more and more and more. And I just don't know how you can't pull for her at this point, especially when you see the way she's being treated and then how she goes out, one of her biggest critics, talks about what an honor it was to play against her. You don't see that from a lot of today's athletes. You don't get that kind of humbleness, that kind of self-defeating mindset, if you will. It is refreshing in today's greed and arrogance and selfishness of these athletes and these coaches. We've been talking about it this morning, right? Because of the money that's at stake. It's refreshing. So go ahead and don't give her the MVP. Let's see how that goes. Let's see how that plays nationally. But I thought that was pretty funny yesterday to see Taurasi knows she's in a no-win situation because I believe she honestly expected Clark to be a complete flop. That's kind of the impression I got with the comments about, hey, she's going to learn. It's going to be a rude awakening in this league. Well, other than the cheap shots that she's taken and nobody's standing up for, yeah, it hasn't really been a rude awakening in terms of her being able to play the way that she's used to playing. Now, her numbers aren't going to be as high. She's got a lot of better players around her. She was the team at Iowa. It's the reason that their coach left, by the way, and retired a few days after Caitlin Clark was drafted. Yeah, I'm not going to be the coach here anymore. Yeah, I'm done. But she's adjusted all the. She took a lot of shots in college. She doesn't have to do that now. She's adjusted. She's gladly given it up. And her team has gotten a lot better. Isn't that what you ask for from a top pick? Isn't that what you ask for as a fan, no matter if you're a big WNBA or women's basketball fan or not? Isn't that what you look for? I wish more male athletes were like that across the way. Do you think you could get this kind of humbleness and honesty from a guy like Caleb Williams, the Bears quarterback? The guy who's already talking about how he's going to, what fingernail color he's going to paint opening day. Did you see that? Yeah, boy. There's a role model blossoming. But for Dana Taurasi and the rest of the league, I hope you like your crow prepared in a variety of ways, because you're going to be eating lots of it. Not only as this season progresses, but as the future of that league, if it has one, progresses, because of that player from Iowa that doesn't meet the agenda, but boy, oh boy, she's surpassing it in every way, shape, and form each and every time she steps onto the floor. We'll be back, wrap up the program after this. I'm Rick Watson, and recently on Big Dog Sports Talk, Notre Dame has so much hand, and they are just reveling in it. Because Notre Dame knows that the two most powerful entities in all of college athletics, but remember, according to Greg Sankey, it's certainly not. It's not an alliance, but Notre Dame knows.
It's BDST in the NRV.
Here on a Monday. Great text messages as always. Phone calls as well. Happy birthday again to Big Al. 2 edition tomorrow. Mike Burnett, Jermaine Farrell, David Smith scheduled to join us. Out here in the field. Hope everybody enjoys the rest of their Monday. I tell you what, I just went outside a while ago. It feels great out there today, man. It almost feels like a really early fall day this morning. It feels great. It's great. I don't need to fight to prove I'm right. We'll resume all these discussions and even more tomorrow here on the program. But I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Be safe. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Here at News Center 4. I'm Ron Burgundy.
You stay classy, New River Valley.